Hello, welcome to the first episode of Beyond Unsolved. This is going to be a podcast, and I'm going to be putting this video up on YouTube. I first want to just explain a little bit the idea behind Beyond Unsolved. So the title is a combination, it's a combination of two shows that really impacted me as a child. And those shows are Unsolved Mysteries, which I think most people know, and Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction, which is a lesser known show, but similar. So Unsolved Mysteries is kind of a combination of themes. So you have true crime. And when I was a kid, my personal favorite theme, which was paranormal, and they have a little bit of like religious kind of mystery, really anything that's true crime, mysterious, paranormal, you know, spooky stuff was kind of fair game for Unsolved Mysteries. And that ran a long time and scared a lot of kids, myself included. Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction was a show that had a couple different hosts. The first season was hosted by James Brolin, and then the rest of the seasons until it ended was hosted by Jonathan Frakes. So this show was similar in that there was a little bit of true crime, a little bit of paranormal. But the premise was you had five stories, and some of them were true, some of them were false. And so you had to decide which they were. And then at the end of the show, the host would tell you which was true and which was false. And to this day, so this particular show, not all the episodes have held up very well. You know, some of them are kind of cheesy, but it still gives me goosebumps to this day. And every now and then I'll put it on like in the background while I'm doing things if I want a little bit of nostalgia. My cat is clawing at the door. And I will still forget which ones were true and which ones were false. And it's one of those shows that kind of, that show and Unsolved Mysteries, they kind of bring the family together when we're all together. It brings us together to watch something that gives us good feels. Which is kind of weird to say about something that has true crime and creepy stuff, but I grew up on them, and my family has a lot of fond memories sitting around in Florida watching like Beyond Belief, eating a Sonny's Barbecue, which is like one of my favorite restaurants that we don't have up here in Washington State. But so it's nostalgic, it has that creep factor, it's just all good things. And I'm subscribed to Unsolved Mysteries podcast, and I saw on their latest episode that they are coming back with a season two in spring 2022. So it is now January 2022, and I'm excited because they did a two-part first season. The first part, I think, came out in 2019, second part came out in 2020, so now 2022. Wait. No, I have that wrong. The first part of the season came out in 2020. Second part of the first season came out in 2021. Now here we are, 2022, and we're going to get a brand new season. So I'm very excited for that. I'm definitely going to be talking about those episodes in my podcast, going over them and give my perspective a little bit. So the idea of this podcast is to take those two shows and give my take on all of the episodes, talk about them at length, give them the, oh my God, I'm missing a nail. I meant to go to the nail salon before I went, before I did this, but they couldn't get me in until 5:45 and I've got to leave in 4 minutes. So I was trying not to like show them, but actually you'll see them when I come back because this episode won't be finished before I leave, but I wanted to start it because I have to take my kid back at 9. We have a 2-year-old little girl, and my husband on Saturdays keeps her until 9 so I can get some things done, and then I keep her on Saturdays so that he can have some free time. Anyway, So, this podcast is going to be part talking about those shows and going over them in detail, but also talking about new stories that may not have been on these shows. Just general true crime, paranormal things that are apart from these shows that I find, and that I find interesting. So it's going to be a mix of paying tribute to these shows, going over them, and then finding new stories. So I'll probably alternate between talking about one show, the other, and then just finding other random stories that don't have to do with the shows. Also, I want to talk about like creepy, you know, whether it be paranormal or true crime documentaries. I think that fits in really well. Pretty much anything that fits in with like paranormal, true crime genre is fair game. One documentary that I definitely want to talk about in another episode is called Surviving Death. It is a Netflix show that came out about a year ago that I watched, liked it a lot, and then never recorded anything about, but I think it fits perfectly in this podcast. So I will be talking about that pretty soon. Probably actually that'll be the second episode, I think, because I just got it ready to go. So I think that's pretty much the introduction. I have an Instagram for Beyond Unsolved. If you want to see my personal Instagram, it's at AlexandraMatthews1007. So whenever I come back, I gotta leave in 2 minutes, I'll go ahead and stop this here. When I come back, I will break down the very first episode of Unsolved Mysteries. One of the interesting things about Unsolved Mysteries, so the first season, the first episode of the first season has an update, which kind of confused me because I'm like, isn't this the first episode? But actually the show started out, I think, as like a standalone special. So it had stories in those. And then when they started the show as a regular show, then they already had updates as of the first show. So that is why you'll see at least one update in the first episode. But I'm excited to break it down, talk about it, get into the nostalgia, revisit these stories, and hopefully this podcast will reach people out there that love these shows as much as I do and have an interest in true crime and paranormal. So I'll see you when I come back with my new nails. Okay, I am back. We are all better now. I have new claws. Okay, so the pilot episode of the Unsolved Mysteries series started in 1989. I was 3. The episode opens up with Mr. Robert Stack himself on a train platform in the dark, and he introduces our very first story.
Our four mysteries tonight are connected by common threads. Unexplained circumstances, deceit, the suggestion of foul play. At the heart of each is a husband and a wife. These mysteries will be difficult to solve, but the stakes are high when people's lives are involved. Perhaps you can help. We've recreated the events of each story in precise detail in the hope that someone, somewhere, knows the truth. Join me. You may be able to help solve a mystery.
The first story is about, I probably shouldn't have my cats in here because they are fighting, apparently. Okay. It takes place in Michigan with Dave and Shannon Davis. They're going on a horseback ride, and after about an hour, Shannon fell off her horse and hit her head. People believed him in the beginning that it was an accident, but they saw clues that he wasn't who he appeared to be, and then he disappeared. So Dave wanted to cremate the body, and Shannon's dad knew that Shannon wouldn't want this. I don't know if it was a religious reason, but he knew, and so he was so upset about it and so adamant that she not be cremated, that he was going to go to a judge and try and get some kind of a order to make it so that she was not cremated. So she ultimately was not cremated. They buried her. Dave had a life insurance policy that he lied about. He said he did not have it, but in fact, he did on Shannon. Dave was emotionless at Shannon's funeral, which earlier it said that he disappeared, but I guess he was at Shannon's funeral. He lied about a lot of things, including serving in Vietnam. And according to the episode, six different life insurance companies contacted the funeral home. And then prior to that, he had burned a home down to commit insurance fraud. So this guy burns down homes. He kills his wives. His wife for money. And it's interesting because in stories where spouses wind up dead, if it's suspicious and if it gets ruled a homicide, they always suspect the spouse. Always. In a lot of cases, it turns out to be the spouse. It could be for money, which a lot of it is based off of money. And I feel like in the true crime cases that I have heard about that were motivated by, well, I was going to say, I feel like a lot of those cases that I remember hearing about were women, and like they'll poison their spouse for insurance money. But I have heard of a few where, you know, men, like there's this one, I don't remember the name of it or anything, but I could probably look it up. There was this one man who had multiple wives, probably actually not just one man. I think there's probably multiple cases like this where the man will have a series of wives and they will all die under mysterious circumstances and he collects life insurance on every one. But what I was saying about when the woman kills the husband, a lot of times it's also for money, and then they poison. Like they typically, like their MO is poison. And that reminds me of this article I read recently. Maybe when I'm editing this, I can post like a screenshot or something of it. But like the other day, I was reading about how this man, I believe he was in Florida, and he had gone missing. And somebody hadn't heard from him in a couple years, and they reported him missing. And so his wife had remarried, and then they show up at her house because they're like, where's your husband? And she tells them to get a search warrant. So they come back with cadaver dogs and like, I think ground penetrating sonar too. It turns out the husband was buried beneath a fire pit in her backyard. She had since remarried. And when she got remarried, she had the ceremony in her backyard, feet away from where her ex-husband or her missing husband, I don't even know if they were divorced, was laying in a shallow grave. He was like 3 feet below the fire pit. And she says that she's innocent, and her current husband, I think, believes her, sir. Because what are the, like she has to be responsible, right? Because she's living in this house. Like who else? So they found, when they exhumed him, he had, I think, point blank shot like to the back of his head. Who else would have done it but his wife? Who else? Because also they talked to neighbors, and he was like, I think, a pilot, but also did like mechanic type of stuff. And a neighbor came to borrow one of his tools. And they were like, well, your husband isn't going to miss it. And she goes, no. He's never going to need it again. And then her current husband said that at one point she told him that her ex-husband was no longer walking this earth. And then I think he later recanted. Anyways, that doesn't have anything to do with this episode. This wasn't in the episode. This was recent. This was like, I think the husband went missing in 2015, 2016, and then this just recently all got discovered. So anyways, I say that to say, unfortunately, there are so many cases where spouses kill the other one because of money. If it's not for life insurance, it's because it would cost them too much to divorce them and they're having an affair. Like, it's just crazy. Or, like, kind of the saddest one of all to me is, and it tends to be the father where he's having money troubles and he kills his whole family because of money troubles. I told Danny, because Danny, like, he's an engineer and we're pretty comfortable, you know, I'm not working, but I told him, I'm like, listen, I don't think he would ever do anything like this, but I'm like, look, just in case I need to say something, if you ever have money trouble, if you ever lose your job, we can work it out. Don't kill us all, please. And then, oh my gosh, okay, one last thing before I get back into like what we're talking about. Another thing that was really sad recently, like, so we're in like the second week of January 2022. There was an article about they're both police officers. I don't think they were married. I think that they were just partners and they had a 1-month-old son. New Year's Eve, the father killed himself. They don't know why, but he was on life support after the attempt. And then the family removed him from life support. And then 2 days later, his partner killed herself and they left the son orphaned. And I believe he is going to be adopted by a close family member. That one struck a lot of people. I mean, I think that made national news because I saw it in People. I saw it in local articles. I don't remember where they lived, but they were both police officers. They were both like early to mid 20s. And the grandmother of the woman who killed herself said it was like a Romeo Juliet type of situation. And they think that they don't know why he did it, but they think that she did it because of postpartum depression and having lost her partner. It's just like, cause I'm a parent, I have a 2-year-old daughter. And when you look at something like this and you're a parent, I can't imagine like the first year of your life when you have an infant is probably some of the hardest times you're going to have in your life. But I can imagine, but I can't imagine, you know, cause I also had like, I believe I had particularly postpartum anxiety. And that first year was hell on earth for me. But anyway, those are just a couple recent things that I read in the news. But getting back to Unsolved Mysteries, which is what we're here for in this episode. When they exhumed Shannon's body, they found an animal tranquilizer in her system. So when they were trying to figure out how did this get in her system, and how would Dave have administered this to her? Where would he have gotten it from? So it turns out Dave was a part of a deer hunting club where they hunted with bows and arrows. And they used a drug that they put on the arrow for when they were hunting these deer. So he had access to this. So they think that when they were riding their horses, he pushes her off the horse. And then as she was struggling, he puts this animal tranquilizer in her and disguises it as a horseback riding accident. So Dave moves to Florida. And then apparently from there he goes to, so he moved to Florida, but then there's an update because he is caught. So he moved to American Samoa and had a 20-year-old wife, who he told that his first wife died in a tragic accident. And then as he was being taken into custody, reporters are asking him, you know, did he do it? And he says that he didn't do it, but he's convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison. So that is the first story. It's always satisfying when there is an update because you're like, okay, like, some people love unsolved mysteries, unsolved murders. I like it when they're solved. I think most people do, but some people in particular really loved the unsolved. stories because they like to theorize about what happened. So the next story is an update from a previous special, I can only assume, because this is the pilot episode. And like I said, Unsolved Mysteries, I believe, started as a couple one-off specials, which I don't think I ever saw. And I would actually really like to see those. I need to hunt them down because the way that I watch Unsolved Mysteries is I watch it on Amazon Prime because you can get those episodes. It's included in Amazon Prime. This update is on a man named George Marsh of Kansas City in 1982. And when I said in 1982, I felt like Sophia who says, picture it, Sicily, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then Betty White died this year. Wait, no, she died New Year's Eve 2021. Now all the Golden Girls are gone. It's sad. Like she just missed 2022 because she died on New Year's Eve, but also within days she would have turned 100. So that's sad. But I saw a recent article that said that her last words were her husband's name, who died a long time before she did. And I don't think she ever remarried. She thought her husband was the best thing ever. Nobody could compare. She never remarried. And she said his name just before she died. And that gives me goosebumps because they say that people, when they're near death, like literally goosebumps. Oh my gosh. They say that when people are near death, they see loved ones that have passed or they see something beautiful, they see heaven, whatever. I'm not a religious person, but I do find all that to be very interesting. So for her to say her husband's name, like maybe goosebumps. Oh my God, like full body goosebumps. Seriously. Like, okay. But and I keep talking, and as I keep talking about this, the goosebumps just keep coming. So maybe she saw him. Maybe he came to greet her so they could go to the other side together. That is chilling. Absolutely chilling. Okay, back to the next story. So this update, George Marsh of Kansas City, 1982. He dies in a nursing home, leaving behind $175,000. Now, I don't know how much $175,000 in 1982 equates to 2022. Wow. I'm sure somebody will know. But so George Marsh wasn't his real name. His birth name was Joseph Zelenka. And when he died, people were going through family pictures. They were trying to find next of kin to know where this money could go. So a woman named Eleanor recognized one of the family photos. She recognized herself in the photo. And then come to find out his brother Jim had been looking for him since 1931. And he had no idea why his brother left the family, why they couldn't find him for so long. But the family plans, this was in the 80s. They're probably all gone too now because they seemed pretty elderly, but they planned to divide the money. So that was the update on that story. And that's so sad. There was at least one other story similar to this that I remember in an Unsolved Mysteries episode where a man lived alone and had amassed a little bit of money that when he died, they tried to find next of kin. So this is not the only story. There was another one and I will get to it. I don't know what episode it was, but this definitely sounds like another Unsolved Mysteries episode. Okay, next story. Does anybody else have trouble saying rural Oklahoma? There was a car that burned on this isolated road so extensively that it melted, and they couldn't identify the person inside. The body was burned beyond recognition, but they knew somehow who the car was registered to. And then they realized that it was his wife inside. Her name was Eileen Conway. And the husband believed that this was foul play. So the first story that we talked about was a husband that killed the wife. But in this episode, or in this story, no one seemed to suspect him. And it was him that said, "This is foul play." And the reason he said that is because he came home after a few hours and the house was in a weird state. So the patio door was open. Her purse and her driver's license and her glasses, her purse was still there. Her glasses and her driver's license was still in it. So she's out driving on an isolated country road without her purse, driver's license, and her glasses. That's not normal. And then the iron was also left on. The hose was left in the swimming pool. The bathtub was full of water and the phone was off the hook. So the husband thought that this was a home invasion gone wrong. But if it was a home invasion gone wrong, wouldn't they have just killed her in the house? Like, why would she be in a car on this road that her husband says they don't like ever go to burned? Like, that's just weird. That is very, very weird. But her husband got an investigator, and initially her death was ruled as accidental. But then the investigator got enough evidence together and it went from accidental to unexplained. So not homicide, but unexplained. But they did rule that the car crash was arson now. So one of the reasons why they say this is because in most arson cases, the gas cap is removed. And that was what was found to be the case with this vehicle. And then they also think that the inside of the car was drenched with gasoline, which I guess would make sense, like if it was accelerated and everything had melted and she was burned beyond recognition, like that there would be an accelerant used. But nobody knows why she was murdered. And that one didn't have any updates, so we don't know. The next one is kind of crazy. This one is about a like young married couple. The woman was a lot older, like 9 years younger than the man. But they go on a rafting or like canoeing trip from, was it Idaho? They wanted to go to California and they wanted to go through the Grand Canyon. So from, was it from Idaho? Or they were from Idaho and they wanted to go through the Grand Canyon on their way to California. Anyway. So there's a photographer involved in this because when he died, they found bones in his boathouse. And when the newlyweds went missing, he was the last person to see them alive. So they're trying to see if these bones, it was the bones of one person. So they wanted to see if the bones matched one of the couple. So this couple's boat was homemade, and one of the weird things that they said about it was that it resembled a coffin, which sounds pretty ominous now knowing that they went missing. So in the episode, they talk about how the photographer, whose name was Emery, tried to convince them that I guess they had come across him as they were traveling, and he tried to convince them to not continue traveling on because of the dangers. And then Glenn, so the couple's name, I don't think I said the couple's name. The man's name was Glenn and the woman's name was Bessie. It was Glenn and Bessie Hyde. And Glenn wanted to do this big journey without any safety equipment. And Emery was trying to at least get them to take life jackets, which Glenn refused. Eventually, their boat would be found without them in it. And not just their boat, but all their belongings. They were just gone. The people, that is. The bodies had never been found until bones were found in Emery's boathouse after he died. So they had a doctor basically take the skull and superimpose like it on or behind a photo. And he was able to look and see that the bone structure, the eyes, the teeth, they didn't match. But he did say that they were of a male between 20 and 23 years old, 6 feet in height with light brown hair. How do you look at a skull and can tell that it has light brown hair? Unless, because in the episode, they just showed a skull with no hair on it. But unless it still had hair on it, like how would you know the hair color? But there was a bullet that was found in the skull, and the death was in the 1920s, and only Glenn and Bessie went missing in the Grand Canyon area during that time. So 1971, there was a group of people rafting in that same area, and there was one woman in the group who one night during a campfire, as they were telling the story of Bessie and Glenn, she confessed that she was Bessie. She claims that she killed Glenn. She stabbed him because they got into a fight and he came after her, beat her up. But shortly after that, she retracted her confession. But the people on this trip fully believe that it was her. And there's no other updates past that. It's like, if they can never find her, where had she been? Did she get a new identity? And then why would she come back with a group of people rafting in the same area where she supposedly killed her husband and then confess all of that and then be like, just kidding. Isn't that weird? That's pretty weird. That was a weird one. So this is the last story of this episode. This one, it's a missing woman. And another case where you could point to the husband. And honestly, I'm going to show some of the interview that he did. And this one actually reminds me of one of the new episodes from the first season of Unsolved Mysteries when they brought it back. Like this latest time when they brought it back. And because the husbands in both episodes are like, I didn't do it, but they are extremely unlikable and really act like somebody who just doesn't care and somebody who honestly would have done it. So in June, is June 12th, which June 12th is my niece's birthday. She's 9. She'll be 10 this year. Whoa. June 12th, 1985, which I was negative 1 year old. Dottie Kaler, she had agoraphobia, which is somebody who is terrified to leave the house. And her husband says that she boarded a train and disappeared. Mm-hmm. So her husband, who was an entomologist for the Forest Service, he had an attitude, like the whole episode. Like he was just like, oh, I just can't be bothered. Like, you know, like really, really unlikable guy. And really, in my opinion, suspect, prime suspect. So his name is Jules. And he thinks that she went missing to spite him because apparently earlier in the marriage, he went missing on her. No other information about that is given, just that he thinks that his eye roll. He's just so annoyed. His wife is missing, could be dead, and he's just annoyed by this woman. So he worked out of town over 50% of the time, and his wife was agoraphobic. So he's gone half the time, and she's just home alone. But she does have friends because they interview her friends during this episode. Their marriage really goes down when she tells friends that they have a fight and he hits her with a board, a wooden board. But his story is she started the fight with him and threatened to kill him with scissors. And that is when he hit her with a board. So we don't know what the truth is. But he says that she had a secret life. And he thinks that she went missing to start a new life. She did. So after she went missing, her husband found out that she had a secret mailbox. So he thinks that that's a part of how she was planning her secret life. She'd been in contact with somebody to help her get set up wherever she was going to go. So before she went missing, her husband had gotten a job transfer to Utah, and she told him that she was not going to be going with him, and he didn't expect her to, and he fully was prepared to go without her. That is when he took her to the train station, and he never saw her again. But he came back, apparently, to the train station where his car was, and her VW, her Volkswagen, was parked next to his car, but it had her purse in it. And her friend thought this was just a giant red flag because Dottie never left anywhere without her purse. It was a source of security for her, and she would keep things in it to help make her feel better when she was out because she was scared of leaving the house. So her friend was like, there's no way that she would just leave her purse. Something happened to her. And so her husband, so Jules, like, left a note on the car saying, he left a note in her car saying things like he still loved her and wanted to be with her, which I just don't believe. Like, unless he's so butthurt and truly believes that he was abandoned, it just doesn't add up. Like, something happened to her. And he's an entomologist. Was an entomologist. Hang on. I feel like it has something to do with bugs. But let's see really quick. A person who studies or is an expert in the branch of zoology concerned with insects. I was right. Okay. So hear me out. This is what I think happened. Being that he worked with the Forest Service, and he was an entomologist, so he knew the woods, and maybe he knew, like, where to put her, where there would be certain bugs that, like, might really get rid of a body fast. Hello. Oh my gosh, that just dawned on me. That makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. Okay. And add that to the fact that her friend was like, Jules, are you going to call the police? And Jules never called the police. If you were leaving notes in your wife's car, like, I love you still, and you were worried about her, why would you not call the police? Why? Why not? You know, it's very, very, very weird. Jules was considered a suspect. As usual, when somebody goes missing, if they have a spouse, they're going to look at the spouse. And this guy, if I have not already inserted footage, I need to insert footage of this guy because he did it.
Proves to be anything other than a straight disappearance case. Jewel will be a suspect in her disappearance or in her death, whatever it may be, along with anybody else that may have been close to her at the time or prior to her disappearance.
You would certainly consider those around that person as being possible suspects. No, that doesn't bother me at all. I suspect that she either willfully disappeared and then was helped to permanently disappear, or perhaps just got in with the wrong person right at the start.
2.5 years have passed, and still no one knows if Dottie Kaler built a secret life for herself to escape an unhappy marriage, or if she was simply the victim of foul play.
It was hell living with Dottie. It was hell having her disappear the way that she did. And yet, since I've gotten here and gotten settled and into a new job and that whole problem is behind me, Things are really pretty good.
And then this one particular part where he said that he was not worried about being a suspect at all. And I put, wow, he totally killed her in my notes. But that is it for that one. And then, of course, in typical Unsolved Mysteries Robert Stack fashion, he is at the end of the episode saying,
"Perhaps someone watching tonight knows what happened and can reveal the truth. Perhaps it's you."
His like iconic ending to these episodes. Oh my gosh. Like the Robert Stack episodes are the best. And I love the fact that in these new episodes that are airing on Netflix, that there's no host. It's totally documentary style. But in the beginning, like in the intro, of course, they have the music, which you cannot have Unsolved Mysteries without the music. You know what I'm talking about. And they have this ghostly image of Robert Stack in the intro as if he's always there. He will always be a part of Unsolved Mysteries. Nobody can take his place. And there's just this little image, this fleeting image of him as the intro ends. It's just perfect. And then speaking of the most recent episodes, the latest, so the first season was in two parts. And the second part, they have this really great episode. Well, it's a sad episode. It's a very sad episode. But it's about a tsunami that happened in Japan. And in that episode, it talks about the hauntings that happened after. And I'm getting goosebumps. That happened afterwards. There's very, very sad stories about like this one about this man who lost his whole family and how he found them after the tsunami. That is gut-wrenching. But when you get, well, and then another one where a woman lost her son and what she says about how she encounters his ghost. But the taxi driver stories about what they've experienced after the tsunami. It's my favorite story of the second part of season one. So if you haven't watched it, you really should go and watch it. And that is it for my first episode of Beyond Unsolved. Like I said, I'm going to upload this to my podcast. And then I'm also going to upload the video portion to my YouTube channel, which is Alexandra Matthews. And I'm going to separate these out from my other videos. I do a lot of other kinds of videos. And so I'm going to try and organize these. So if you just come here for Beyond Unsolved episodes, you'll be able to find them easily. If you want to check out Beyond Unsolved on Instagram, it is Beyond Unsolved on Instagram. If you want to see my personal Instagram, it's AlexandraMatthews1007. And that is it until next episode. I believe, like I said, I'm going to be doing the documentary Surviving Death. Very, very good documentary. I highly suggest that you go watch it. So if you go watch it, then you'll know what I'm talking about in my next episode. If you liked this podcast/YouTube episode, if you're on YouTube, subscribe, give it a like, comment, let me know what you think about Unsolved Mysteries. If you saw this episode, what are your theories about some of these stories? And if you're listening on my podcast, rate my podcast so that more people can hear about it. Give me good reviews if you like it. And I think that's about it. I'll see you in my next YouTube video or my next podcast episode. And I thank you for watching/listening.